Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Okay, I don't know any other way to put this than to just put this in plain old-fashioned, good, blessed, simple English. I hate Joe Lieberman. I despise Joe Lieberman. I mean, I loathe the little molecules in the air that Joe Lieberman breathes. Joe Lieberman is... son of a... Joe Lieberman. Vows he'll filibuster you and me getting to go to the doctor in the form of a public option if it comes to the floor. Who does he think he is? Son of a... My God in heaven... It is simply stunning that one human being could contain within his corporeal being that much hubris and that much disdain for the citizens of the United States. I hate Joe Lieberman. I can't and understand that this is merely speech. But there is nothing on this earth or outside that light years out of the solar system that could happen to Joe Lieberman that would make me grieve. That's all there is to it.
Joe Lieberman says he very much wants to have some health care reform in the United States. But he doesn't want to endanger the economic recovery that we're in.
Really, Joe?
Yes, absolutely. And if I'd been alive in 1939, I would have said that I very much wanted to avoid a Holocaust, but I didn't want to endanger the economic recovery that was brought about by the sale of all those ovens. If I'd been around in 1912, I would have said that I was very much opposed to the human tragedy of the Titanic, but that I was very concerned about overloading the lifeboats.
This man thinks highly of himself, Joe Lieberman. He thinks so highly of himself that he thinks he can, in his own right, murder. Because that's what he's effectively saying. By eliminating the public option, by swearing that he will filibuster any health care reform bill with the public option in it, no matter how weak, he will sign the death warrants of at least another 45,000 American citizens. And another 45,000 or more the year after that. And another 45,000 or more the year after that. And 50,000 the year after that. And 70,000 5 years from now, because the number just keeps growing. There is a festering cancer on the American body politic, and its pale, yellow, infected head is Joe Lieberman. That's really what he said, you know. That really is what he said. Joe Lieberman said that he's afraid, that he is afraid that having a public option would endanger our economic recovery. Oh, I remember the other night. What night was it? When we were talking about wanting one of those good old-fashioned gods who used lightning bolts and just, and it was over, and everybody understood that the hand of God had moved upon the face of the earth and that one had best be careful lest one offend that deity. Well, if you're up there, Joe Lieberman can be found somewhere between Washington, D.C. and somewhere in Connecticut. You being all-powerful, I'm figuring you can work out the details. Put Gilligan on the little coconut shell bicycle and start ramping some amps, God. Oh, look, Joe's been reduced to a smoking cinder of his former self. Think that could have had anything to do with the fact that he was out there advocating for the death of another 45,000 Americans next year simply because they won't have access to health insurance? You think that might have been it?
Yes, that was it.
Thanks, God! This is no... By the way, just in case you're a little bit disturbed... by the fact that I have said that there's nothing on planet Earth bad enough to happen to Joe Lieberman to make me grieve. Understand, this is not some principled decision that he has reached after anguished hours in prayer. Oh, hell no. This is a decision that Joe Lieberman reached after Joe Lieberman took a look at his bank account. Aetna Insurance, the health insurer, is headquartered in, curiously enough, Connecticut, where Joe Lieberman purports to represent the people thereof. When Harry Reid announced yesterday, and of course now that tough gunfighting Joe has said he'll fight back, I fully expect to see Harry scamper for the nearest rock and crawl under it. Is my magic underwear still intact? Yesterday, when Harry Reid announced that there would be some kind of public option, some sort of weak, pitiable, pathetic, public option, not robust single-payer health care for all Americans, but some little itsy-bitsy public option inside the health care bill that would go to the floor of the Senate. When Harry Reid said that, well, oddly enough, the insurance stocks had a fainting spell on Wall Street.
Oh, Tallulah, go and get me my smelling salts. I do feel faint.
I got one of those fuzzy little graphs that looks like somebody's heartbeat going, up till the point where Joe says,
and I, Joe Lieberman, will step in and defend and preserve and protect the insurance industry of America.
And then all of a sudden,
Tallulah, Tallulah, I'm feeling better. Oh, gracious. I'm stronger by the minute.
And sure enough, right back up come the insurance stocks, and they wind up closing higher than they were before Harry Reid said anything. Holy smokes!
Holy pre-existing condition, Batman! That Joe Lieberman, he's some big medicine!
Or big not medicine, as the case might be. And like I said, Aetna did the best of all of the health insurance companies in the recovery. Oh, he's getting stronger, doctor. Look at that. His numbers are off the chart. He's almost strong enough to destroy America! Yeah, Aetna did the best. Like I said, it's based in Hartford, Connecticut. And curiously, and I'm sure this has nothing to do with it, yes it does, Aetna is the 10th largest single private contributor to Joe Lieberman's re-election committee. In other words, when Aetna speaks, Joe listens. When Aetna says, Froggy, Joe Lieberman says, Ribbit. When Aetna says, no, really, Froggy, Joe Lieberman jumps. When Aetna says, Froggy, we're not kidding, Joe Lieberman puts on the little bow tie and top hat and gets on stage and, hello, my baby, hello, my honey. Ribbit. I'm furious. I am furious. And I'm also a little concerned with myself. No, this is not all about Bob. My ego hasn't quite grown to that sort of monumental proportion yet. We're saving that till I get the Gulfstream 5, okay? Or hell, even the Piper Cub, you know? But I'm a little concerned about how god-awful angry this makes me. This can't be healthy. But this is also not Glenn Beck talking about how he would, and, you know, practically masturbating over the fact, over talking about how he'd like to get his hands around the neck of Michael Moore. No. I don't want to be in the same room as Joe Lieberman. Hell, it's going to be hard enough to be in the same city with the dirty little bastard. I'm going to feel like I have to shower every 15 minutes just because some air that may have touched the inside of his freakish corporate nostrils has somehow wound up inside me. It's enough to make you want to take one of those flu masks with you. But... You know, he's real, real pious, that Holy Joe. And as a result of that, what you really want is for something truly biblical to happen to Joe. Frogs, locusts, rivers of blood, boils, stuff out of the book of Job, that's what you want for Holy Joe. Only, you know, in the book of Job, it was all about the meaninglessness of it all. That was God getting his jollies off by tormenting a man who had done nothing but worship him his entire life. It is, quite frankly, probably the mother of absurdism. If you want to get right down to it, the book of Job is. And you know, at one point in Job, sooner or later you're going to sit down and read it. It's fascinating. Don't read it for reality. Be a real, be a modern thinking Homo sapiens sapiens kind of human being. And read it understanding the point that the writers of the book, who I believe Job was written during the Persian exile of the children of Israel. And they were trying to make the case for why things happen, and the only thing they could come up with was, you know, because it's ancient them, and you just didn't say, you know, there is no God and Woody Allen is his prophet. So the closest they could come to was to write a book in which someone questions God for why God does something, why God allows evil things like Joe Lieberman to crawl around on the earth. And God speaks to Job out of the whirlwind. And he says, I'm God and you're you. Who the hell are you to ask me? Did you make the universe? No? Then shut up. Which, of course, is a sort of a non-answer answer that, if you're reading closely, I think would probably be agreed by a lot of the serious scholars, is sort of an admission by God that he's out of the loop. Except when he wants to be in the loop, because you got to remember, even God's not the one doing all the rotten crap to Job. The devil is the one doing the rotten crap. God just gives his assent. God just says, yeah, go ahead and do it, just don't kill him. And, you know, for all his piety, for all his religious fervor, this hateful little weasel-faced beast, Joe Lieberman, has no concept whatsoever of the fundamental decencies that are contained in the holy books. You know, Jesus wasn't the, and I understand, he's not part of that team, Joe's not, but Jesus wasn't the only one that said, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. There's all kinds of teaching like that in the part of the book that Job does buy into. It's in the Buddhist texts. Jesus Christ, it's in Socrates. It's in the Quran. Well, we'll leave that one out because if it was up to Joe, there wouldn't be any Arabs left on the planet. That's why I call him Genocidal Joe. He never met an Arab he didn't figure deserved to die for something. But it's not that meaningless misery that you want, that Jobian misery that you want for Joe Lieberman. It's something that has real purpose. It's something that's got a real, oh, what's the new phrase, teachable moment in it. You want Job. No, not Job. Joe. You want Joe leaning over a hospital bed in impotent wrath and fury as a life he cares about goes dwindling away. Now, wait a minute. The only life he cares about is his own. So he'll have to be the one laying in the bed. You want somebody to look at Joe and say, you know, Joe, we'd love to treat you, but your plan doesn't cover the medicine you need, and you don't have the coverage for the treatment you need. And we're sorry, Joe, but you're just out of luck. If you're going to die, like Representative Alan Grayson has said, die quick, Joe. Don't linger about making misery for the rest of your family. Go on, get! Don't let the metaphysical door hit you on the ass on the way out, Joe. That's what you want for Joe. Nothing instantaneous. You know, I remember here, I forget who it was about, but some miserable person had been described as having been involved in some sort of an accident, and someone replied, well, gee, I hope it didn't hurt too little. That's what you want for Joe for this. You want the accumulated misery of the 45,000 people per year who die, not because of disease, But because they don't have access to health care, you want the accumulated misery of those 45,000 individuals plus the extended misery of all those people who love them. You want all of that to just crash onto Joe Lieberman in a great wave of human suffering. So that maybe the light will go on for Holy Joe. And maybe all that religious piety will suddenly turn to ashes in his mouth. And he'll understand that it doesn't matter how pious you are with regard to the rules, that it's what goes on inside the human spirit, and whether or not you are able to manifest the decent, caring emotions that are incumbent upon each one of us as a member of the human race that really counts. That's what you want. That is what you want. But what you get instead, is the same old Joe.
I told Senator Reed that I'm strongly inclined, I haven't totally decided, but I'm strongly inclined to vote to proceed to the health care debate, even though I don't support the bill that he's bringing together, because it's important that we start the debate on health care reform, because I want to vote for health care reform this year. But I also told him that if the bill remains what it is now, I will not be able to support a cloture motion before the final passage. Therefore, I will try to stop the passage of the bill.
That's a bunch of gobbledygook language. You know what that means? That's Joe Lieberman looking at the rest of America and saying, I got mine! Screw you! Die! Die! Die!
Die!
I know we're close to Halloween, but this ain't tricky, and it's damn sure no treat. Now bear in mind, he doesn't want a public option, but he also opposed the Baucus bill. You remember Max? Democrat senator from Montana, bought and paid for by the same people who've bought and paid for Joe Lieberman. Yeah, he opposed the Max Baucus bill, and it didn't have a public option in it. So what Joe wants is ultimately, the only thing Joe apparently will vote for is some sort of miserable, pathetic piece of corporate welfare offal that does nothing for the American people and everything to line the pockets of his corporate crony crowd. Pals in the insurance industry. That's what he wants. He just needs to say so. Oh, he's inclined to vote for it to be debated on the Senate floor, but he'll stand with a filibuster. He'll stand with a filibuster. If it comes to a final vote and there's something that actually speaks to the needs of the American people in it. And this is without regard, of course, to all that's wrong with this public option with an opt-out in it. And the details are far from final. But, you know, I was thinking, the best way to put this is to share with you the words of our good friend David in South Carolina. He wrote earlier, and he was touching on something that had sort of been tickling the back of my brain about this opt-out. But David said it better than I could that I could get my head or brains or mouth around. Hey, Bob, thought you'd understand the feeling of getting kicked in the teeth by the Democratic Party. The arrogance of allowing red states to opt out of health care, treat Southerners as second-class citizens. Maybe you have to be from here to get it. I get it real clear and figure you see what I mean, too. Why have they forgotten the civil rights history of states like South Carolina, Alabama, and Mississippi, and Georgia? It's not that hard to find, and it's obvious what happens when you allow racists to opt out of the law. So the Democrats in blue states just want to cut the red state Democrats loose? So much for sticking together as a party, right? It's always friends who stab you in the back because you know where the enemies are. Yeah. Et tu, Brutus? And that does concern me. What is this? Is this some sort of precursor to a great population shift? Sort of like what happened in India after Pakistan was carved off and the British left and the Muslims had to go to Pakistan and the Hindus stayed in India and everybody fought along the way. If you happen to be liberal and you live in Alabama and you believe in single-payer health care, do you have to pack up bag and baggage and engage in some sort of exodus to go and rent some shanty in New York or Massachusetts so you can have health care? By God, that offends the dickens out of me. It really does. And it's at the heart and soul. It's at the heart and soul of what I keep saying about the South. We are not something to be left by the wayside. There is so much good and so much importance in the South, Appalachian and otherwise, that to simply cede the Southern battlefields to the weird little hate-filled, pig-eyed, mean, rump vestiges of the old Confederacy is a disservice and an outright slap in the face to the people who boldly stand up in the South day after day after day after day and refuse to be intimidated by the right-wing thugs of the Stumplicker Bunch. Liberals, and no offense to folks who are outside the South, but liberals in the South have more guts than, Jesus Christ, a liberal Texan? A liberal Mississippian? I know, Texas is not in the South. Got that geography note. But for these purposes, it is. A liberal Georgian, a liberal Alabamian, and trust me, I know these people exist because I know them personally. A liberal South Carolinian, liberal Tennessean, and we're just going to say, well, you know, we're going to leave you at the tender mercy of the right-wing hordes who run your state, so screw you, buddy. That or get out and come and be with us. Do we not need liberals in the South anymore? Are we just done with the South? And all us people who enjoy warm sunshine and grits and sweet iced tea can just pack up and move to where everybody sounds funny? Do we not want to build that basis upon which we expand the American promise to everyone in this country? That's what it feels like when we talk about this opt-out or opt-in or opt-at-all business. What the hell happened to... I mean, I know the right wing gets off on it and everything, but what happened to one nation under God with life, liberty, and the pursuit of automobiles? What? Where did it go? When did the idea of Tennessee or Alabama become something that you could just whistle past? Look at those sad, sorry bastards trapped in those little neo-fascist states down there can't get to the doctor when they need it. What a shame they don't have the common sense God gave a strangled gosling to move to civilization. But that's the thing, we don't want to move to civilization, we want to bring civilization to where we are. You know what I mean? So, you know, I welcome your thoughts. On this or any other topic, this will be, of course, the last chance we really have to talk this week. Program note, I'll be on the road, so will Guy James tomorrow. We will be broadcasting live from the Building the New Economy Conference, hosted by the Campaign for America's Future from Washington, D.C. on Thursday. We will have gavel-to-gavel coverage beginning to end, and probably some interesting folks to talk to in the midst of the proceedings. And then Friday is a travel day as well. Although there may be something special happening on Friday that you can tune in for, and I'll try to figure out some way to get the word out so that you can know. But that has to wait to be seen. So anything you want to bring to the table tonight is more than fine. Healthcare, right-wing meanness and stupidity, fraud, any of that. And I hope you were not put off by the fact that I had to get that out of my system about Joe Lieberman. Because he is a pole star for what is wrong with what is left, the shambled wreckage of what is left of this once noble experiment in a republic based upon democratic principles. But you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. You can save us a little bit of money that way by direct dialing if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing program. Email rolls into bobkincaid@gmail.com, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
yeah, you may think the sun rise and set for you, but it rise and set for poor folks, too. Oh, perfect, perfect bumper call, John Fox, perfect. Of course, you know, I'm of the opinion that one can seldom, if ever, go wrong when one goes to Lowell Feet, Lowell George and Little Feet. And there I go with the crowball again. You were listening last night. Lowell George, a saint in his own right, without a doubt. A couple of emails before we head to the phones. Just a little backgrounder from Maura. By the way, Maura pledged $250 this past Friday night. She's looking for people to match the other $250. We are now only $130 away from that. So if that could happen between now and Friday, that would be a beautiful thing. And you would certainly go a long way toward fulfilling both Maura's and the Horn's hopes on that. Either way's fine. Head on radionetwork.com or the snail mail address, the PayPal or snail mail. They're both available on the website under Contribute. You'll find it right there. But Maura notes that Joe Lieberman's wife, Hadassah, has also worked for the lobbying company APCO and Associates. She's in the pockets of healthcare pharma as well. APCO Associates had many pharmaceutical and healthcare corporations among its clients, not to mention four major drug companies like Pfizer. In March 2005, Hadassah was hired by Hill & Knowlton as senior counselor in the firm's healthcare and pharmaceuticals practice. Well, thank God it's only a practice. God help us if they ever get it right. Hadassah's close relationship with pharmaceutical and healthcare corporations, while her husband introduced legislation benefiting these exact companies, has raised questions about improprieties and conflicts of interest. But just questions. Just questions. Don't sweat it. And Susan notes, News Ninja Susan from Mountain, Oregon, according to the reports, Bob, the opt-out comes to pass only after the states have been opted in for at least a year. Makes a difference? Does to me. I can't see any politician taking health care away from people and surviving. And I can't see them being able to do that in Oregon either, Susan. But I can see them doing it in Mississippi. Look at this. We have had this here social, that socialist in the White House has done give us that socialist public option for a year now, and y'all signed up to be socialist too. We gotta get rid of it before we's all red. Better dead than red. And besides, Jesus don't want no public option in no Alabama. Come on, Alabamians. I know you're there. I know you know. I know you know I'm right. And you know I know you know. We're very knowledgeable people. Come on. Even if you're not from the South, you know that that's what would happen. And you know that legislatures controlled by Republicans and governor's offices controlled by Republicans, they don't give a damn about the will of the people. They do the bidding of party and company. Party first, baby! Party first! And they wouldn't... I'm sure there are Republican conservative family values, Republicans all over the South who would gladly go and unplug you from life support if their corporate masters told them to do so.
Well, they'll just be going home to Jesus. Were they Christian? Well, then it's okay. Unplug them. They can go home to Jesus. Were they not Christian? Was he not saved? Oh, my lands. He wasn't saved. Well, there he is on life support, and Jesus can't reach him now. He can't get saved. Might as well not waste any more of our time here on earth and just send him to hell where he belongs, down there in that lake of fire reserved for the devil and his angels.
Tell me I'm wrong. You can't, because I'm not. So, no, common sense would say no, that there's no way. There's no way. that a state could opt out of the public option. But remember, as David in South Carolina noted, or alluded to, how many years is it that we're still fighting for full civil rights for an entire segment of the population in the South?
And it isn't there yet.
And people like Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions of Hood are still complaining about the federal government coming down and meddling in our affairs, bunch of outside agitators. Don't they know that we know how best to treat our... Michael, Kid A from the chat room, says, Bob, I'm no Southerner, but I feel for y'all. And he even used y'all. See the profound effect that this program has had on people? He used y'all, and he spelled it right and everything. But I feel for y'all. David's email said it very, very well. Perhaps we need some brave Democrat, Kucinich, Grayson, or somebody, to propose an amendment to the opt-out public option health care bill, which states that states can also opt out of any and all provisions of the Civil Rights Act. Maybe that would... maybe that would make the stark reality. Maybe that would make the stark reality of all this come home to the people who want to leave the South flapping in the breeze in their illness, their sickness, their misery, and their dreary trek toward grim death. Maybe that would do it. Well, hell, if you can opt out of that, let's just opt out of everything. Somebody call Rick Goodhair Perry down in Texas and tell him, go ahead and secede. We don't give a damn. Opt out, baby! Or maybe realistically the other trick. The other trick is to say, yes, you may opt out after a year, but please understand that when you do opt out, you will also opt out of all federal funding for highways. Go right ahead. Opt away. Opt till you can't opt no more. Opt till you drop. Go ahead and opt out of the public option. But of course, you'll also be opting out of Medicaid funds and Medicare for all your senior citizens. Opt out for them too, you dirty little bastard right wingers. Opt out of that while you're at it. Because, you know, those old folks, they got nothing else to do but sit around and wait for elections, and they go vote. You just stand there and tell them how proud you were to opt them out of their Medicare, too. You do that. That would work. That would work. So, just some thinking and, you know, thinking out loud. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
I guess you're right. I guess you have to sort of have a buzz to have the buzz be killed. So, I'm trying to think of what...
Were you working on one, Reverbo, and I done took it out and whomped it?
This is just same old thing, huh? Just we're trying to have a good time. Hey, we are... This is a... Just a... It is. It's the perfect storm. We have turned the clock back to 1860. We have opened up the opt-out door. This is perfect.
You know, it is. It's practically the Missouri Compromise, isn't it?
Well, this land, the land, you're not ready to forego. You seem so. You're still sentimental for. Oh, they'll opt out. Bill. You know, it's sort of tit for tat. Well, I guess, I should say teat for tat. The possum goddess is listening.
Yes.
But, you know, what's holding up the 14 more weeks of unemployment insurance is that they want to throw in a bunch of crap about not giving federal funding to Acorn and not having, you know, having to wear green socks on Thursday and all the stuff that they write into these things. Well, yeah, I like that. Yeah, you can opt out and... If and when we're invaded by Martians, you're on your own. If you want any more
help? Or Arabs.
tough luck if you want to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, why not? Yeah, let's. Yeah, and by the way, you just opted out of having military bases in the South. Congratulations.
Oh, there you go. Perfect. But the problem is that they'll actually sit there and they'll contemplate opting out. Bobby Jindal contemplated it. They were all big talkers about that old stimulus fund, weren't they? The governor of South Carolina, he didn't want a penny of it, did he?
No, it'll make the people lazy.
Yeah.
You know, we still got that plantation overseer attitude going on down there. Can't do anything for them. You don't want to feed them too much. They get lazy.
So they will consider opting out, and we want to encourage that consideration. Because those lazy people, they all pull that lever at the voting booth, don't they? Every one of them gets to pull that lever. Which I don't understand. How do they keep electing these plantation owners? I mean, I know a little something about the demographics of the South, and aren't there a lot of people who, you might say, would just as soon vote for anybody but guys like that?
Yeah, but you also got to remember there's a whole lots of stuff gets done to keep folks away from the polls. I mean, I remember back in, 2004, when the Republican Party in Kentucky sent Republican Party operatives to stand a few feet away from the polling places and check the IDs of everybody in the predominantly black voting precincts.
Say no more.
I got one here, Reverbo. I got one right here. And lordy, lordy, it comes from Georgia. Georgia. Sorry, that's all I'll do. The Republican Party of Georgia, this rolled in last week, but it, you know, some of these things I hang on to because they just work. And I know that sooner or later they'll fit just perfectly into the stream of consciousness that is this program. This was back on October the 23rd when 11 Alive, which sounds like some sort of breakfast beverage, frankly, but it's a local Georgia news station, reported that the Republican Party of Georgia had sent out a political mailer that was disguised to look like an official U.S. Census survey. And it's got all kinds of that dummied up garbage to make it look like, I mean, it says, you know, it's a 2009 congressional district census. And then underneath it in tiny little print that I can barely read at 46, and I don't have bifocals yet. Commissioned by the Republican Party. Special notice. You have been selected.
I'm surprised they even wrote any disclaimers.
Oh, yeah. Census document registered to, deliver exclusively to, special notice, you have been selected to represent Republican voters in Georgia's 8th Congressional District. Enclosed, please find documents registered in your name.
Geez, what was I thinking? Where was I? What was my mind? What country am I thinking of where you don't tamper with elections and you know, everybody's got...
Yeah, but Winnie...
What am I doing?
But as Winnie the Pooh's pal Tigger might say, tampering with elections is what Republicans does best.
They keep saying it about like that, too. Well, I, you know, it's okay to, this, and Lieberman is, that's just almost unbelievable. But they will let the rest of us, though, slowly rot while he sits in his socialist healthcare waiting room, waiting for his socialist healthcare doctor to prescribe his socialist healthcare prescription that he buys at a superb socialist healthcare discount. And the rest of us can go rot.
Pretty much.
This country we cannot legislate stupid. We give everybody just this amazing discretionary choices. We tolerate almost everything. The good, the wise ones, and the regrettable ones. And the problem is, I mean, there's also, we evidently don't require too much of our elected officials either. Really,
well, Jesus, the fact that Jim Inhofe and Jefferson Beauregard Sessions with Hood and Saxby Chambliss and chinless Mitch McConnell and that whole crowd are in the Senate means that, I mean, that's living proof that we don't demand much of our elected public servants.
I mean, we do put in stuff. I mean, we have laws. We have laws that say, you know, you're not supposed to, you know, stab somebody in the neck and leave them by the side of the road. We have regulations about how to handle corporations and shit. We have term limits for our elected officials, right? So they don't just sit there and establish empires. But none of this, but the empire, that's all just, when you pull the curtain, that's when you see how it really, really operates. And so if you're going to have two sets of laws, if we're just going to simply look the other way, then at that point, I think all bets are off here. What do you do about that? Then you go back to our wonderful country of nonviolent change.
I've been reading this book by I can't remember his first name. His last name's Douglas with two S's at the end, and it's called Kennedy and the JFK and the Unspeakable, and it's about the murder of John Kennedy. And it talks about the country as it existed prior to November 1963 and everything that led up to his murder. And how, in a speech at American University on June the 10th, 1963, Kennedy announced a unilateral ban on nuclear testing and had the entire country up in arms, 80% against him, leading into his negotiations for a test ban treaty with the Soviets, which was later accomplished. But part of that speech had to do with getting the American people to empathize with the Soviet people and to understand at the bottom of it all, it's all people, that we all have the same sorts of chromosome pairs and that we all have yearnings for our children, that we all hope for some sort of death with dignity instead of, you know, mass extinction via nuclear war. And what struck me as I read it, Reverbo, was that in the years since his murder, we have become the Soviet people. We really have. We have become the Soviet people because we are dictated to as to what we may and may not have. We can't have national single-payer health care, oddly enough, because that would make us communists, when there's every indication that we're a hell of a lot more similar to the communists of the Soviet Union right now than we have ever been related to the capitalists that Adam Smith envisioned. And it's a tough read, not because it's poorly written or anything, but it's a tough read because I know how it ends. And I know how many lives were shattered out of that day in November in Dallas. And it's tough to look right squarely at it, Reverbo, and realize how much America shifted at that point in time. They took Kennedy out. And then the guy that he was actually beginning to work with in the Soviet Union, Nikita Khrushchev, he was pushed out by his own hawkish war ministries. And boom, Cold War kept going. Stayed cold, you know, got a little bit warm here and there, Vietnam, Afghanistan, few thousand dead Soviets, few thousand dead Americans, what the hell, you know, but it's good for business.
It wasn't good for their business. Good for our business. I'm amazed they let's face it, the Soviet Union was corrupt as could be anyway.
And we're not?
Oh, hang on. Wrong. Yeah, I keep saying we. Eric, I mean, you just keep demonstrating how naive I am. I can't believe it. I just feel horrible here. We allow these things. I keep saying, it's the preface to all my sentences. We accept these things.
You know, the people...
We've given that away.
You know, Connecticut is not that large a state. It would not be that difficult to get a bunch of folks from the Nutmeg State, oh, a few thousand of them, to surround Joe Lieberman's house with pitchforks and torches and say, dumbass, that's not what we sent you to Washington to do. Do our bidding. Our bidding is the public option, and you will do it, or we'll find someone who will. It's Connecticut. It ain't Texas. There's not a lot of places he can hide.
Who's that guy's name who he whipped him in the primary, which caused old Joe to
form the Joe Lieberman Party. Yeah, never has there been a more starkly egomaniacal political moment in this country, I don't think.
But I unfortunately was all set to be done with Joe once and for all, and then I noticed who was, you know, trucking in just bags and bags of cash to make sure that wouldn't happen. It was the Republican.
Well, you know, an answer to your question just came rolling in from Andy, who said, Bob, I heard your tirade. I didn't think it was a tirade, but, well, I guess it was. I heard your tirade about the king of corporatists, Joe Lieberman. Note Mr. Lieberman won his campaign against Ned Lamont in the general election, and there's your guy, Ned Lamont, by getting funding and administration support from Michael Bloomberg, the $15 billion plutocrat from the New York mayoral office. Without Bloomberg, Joe was finished. Joe was funded to continue the policies of the corporate status quo, especially in regards to corporate America and our horrible policies supporting Israel, no matter what atrocity or great injustice it perpetrates against its neighbors. Yeah, there's that, too. In the battle to make sure stock options were accounted for as an expense on the corporate income statements, Joe Lieberman fought ferociously to make sure the corporate CEOs kept getting their tremendous stock option grants void of any accounting for free. To keep the status quo, Joe threatened to take away funding from the Financial Accounting Standards Board, who recommended expensing employee stock options on their income statement because stock options aren't and were never free. Joe explained his position. He was
so afraid this would hurt the average lunch bucket carrying working people getting all these stock options.
Which is a blatant lie, because stock option grants are executive heavy in the corporate world, particularly large amounts, 20% to 30% of all stock options, going to the top five executives, his executive buddies in corporate crony America. Joe Lieberman couldn't care less about working people or the average citizen on the street. He is a disgrace to our nation. And thanks for putting it so succinctly, Andy.
Indeed. Well, Lieberman, he's kind of on the right track. He's just got his people all messed up. What'll happen is, unless Joe supports those things, it will actually threaten the peon's ability to go rot slowly under a bridge. You see?
Yes.
Yeah, unless it would hurt, you know, the average have not, if the average have not was yearning for a quick and untimely death. These people are just so out in the open. I'm telling you, if you there's that fine line, there's that tightrope you walk between legal and illegal, and then if that doesn't even matter, if that rope disappears. I mean, just think of how many people just decided to not show up for the congressional subpoenas when that fool was president, 4 years ago. I mean, that's our last hope. The last hope you have right? Our the foundation of everything in this country is our legal structure. You know.
Now, everything I've ever learned in civics class and. All it says that you're right.
Good. That's good. That's right.
No, we are a nation of laws and not of men. That one? Ring a bell?
Here's where you have to throw in all your disclaimers, see? Note, these represent ideal conditions. If your experience is something other than this, please see Constitution for details.
Yes, if you are living in a nation of men and not of laws, you are having an atypical reaction.
If this ain't working out the way it says, find an attorney, a constitutional legal attorney and wait in line at the Supreme Court.
Take a number.
Oh, God. But, yeah, I mean, you've got, there's got to be a way to, it's appalling. How, why? This whole concept of Lieberman is almost hilarious if it wasn't so awful. It's almost like he is. He's that cartoon character, and who is that guy who sounds like that? Who's the guy?
Oh, that's Droopy. That's Droopy.
There you go.
In fact, it just so happens that I have a soundbite here from Joe Lieberman with regard to his feelings on the public option. You know, direct from the horse's mouth. Let me see if I can get it to run here. Yeah, here we go.
That makes me mad.
See?
He does sound just like him.
It's him up and dog, and up and down. Another again with the crowball. Yeah.
The crowball. God, I can't. I'm trying to picture that in a.
The crows object. Trust me.
A Warner Brothers cartoon. What? How big is that? And how do you deliver the crowball? Maybe it has a couple of fuses on it. Oh, God. It says Acme on the side of it. Oh, I love that thing. He would just get a box. He's a coyote. He lives in the desert. A mailman would show up with a box, and inside would be a gigantic crowball. I mean, you can't do better than this.
No, no. The only thing is that right now, we're all the coyote, and we're all opening this box that says Acme Public Option. While the Roadrunner's over there, you know, cruising around with single payer health care, and we just can't seem to catch him. We take our earthquake pills, we use our rocket skates, and we keep just right into the cliff wall.
Where are my rocket skates? I ordered those like 45 years ago.
Oh, yeah, you wanted the rocket skates. I wanted instant hole.
I wanted the helium-filled pants. I'm waiting for all of this stuff. They hijacked our future. They hijacked all of, well, I mean, I used to think it was, you could say, the world ended as we know it on, say, December 31st, 1969. But we could say the world ended as we know it on
November 22nd, 1963.
There you go. I mean, it's just been all circling the drain since then.
It really, and you know, it's not at all surprising, and you know, history geek moment. There's a lot to be said. There's a lot that has been said down the years about the fact that the same sort of thing happened. In ancient Rome with the assassination of the brothers Gracchi of the Cornelian clan.
Oh, they were the reformers.
Yes.
Yeah. I was reading about them because of that guy who wrote the book, Michael Parenti, is that his name?
Mm-hmm.
Who wrote a book on Julius, a little different look on why Caesar might have been offed. Yeah, drawing some interesting comparisons to today. But this is hard. This is so difficult to work with any of this anymore. I mean, we live in this country that goes out of its way, on paper only, to encourage opportunity and we go to these, we're able to go to these incredible heights, and the very reason we can do that, we can't stop people from just, you know, getting stuck in the mud. If that's what they want to do,
Yeah, because we do it on paper, but then if you happen to be an enterprising young front desk clerk at a hotel in New Mexico and your name is Juan, you've got somebody who's already got his coming along and says, No, them people don't understand you when you say your name is Juan. They want you to call, they want you to tell them your name's John.
Note, these represent ideal conditions. If you experience something different, you constitute the details. Look, I don't want to start in front of every line, okay? We're just going to put that at the beginning of the book so we don't have to type that 1,000 times. But we do have a few restrictions. We do have a few laws. We control a few things. But for the most part, you know, you're just if you want to just be a lazy dumb shit, and a senator for that matter.
Oh, and by the way, I just checked the chat room, and Lottie says he ordered an Acme Crow Ball, but he had to buy two because they come in pairs.
Yes, very good. Very good.
Well,
you can see it coming, but I'll have to...
Yeah.
I tell you, I don't... I just don't know.
Well,
you don't know.
You've got your bell, but, you know, this for Lottie. Okay, all better now.
You're not threatening you didn't get another special effects machine recently, have you?
No, it's the same old computer, but Sue kindly sent me along a rim shot. I think she had a feeling I'd be needing it tonight.
I believe I heard that the other night, too. It just adds to the show.
No, that was the homemade one.
Oh. You know, you could just have one cymbal there and a drumstick. You could just... you could hit that thing all night if you wanted. Oh, God, what are we going to do?
Well, you know, this on-paper-only notion that you have identified this evening, Reverbo, goes perfectly with something, with a headline that I just got from our buddy David in Tennessee, from our pals at The Onion. Headline, Scientology losing ground to new fictionology. The new book by Bud Don Elroy, Imaginetics.
Yeah, in the same newspaper that brought us the headline about how gravity is losing popularity to the new intelligent falling theory.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
According to a report released Monday by the American Institute of Religions, the Church of Scientology, once one of the fastest-growing religious organizations in the U.S., is steadily losing members to the much newer religion, fictionology. Unlike Scientology, which is based on empirically verifiable scientific tenets, fictionology's central principles are essentially fairy tales with no connection to reality. In short, fictionology offers its followers a mythical belief system free from the cumbersome scientific method to which Scientology is hidebound. Created in 2003 by self-proclaimed messiah Bud Don Elroy, fictionology's principles were first outlined in the self-help paperback Imaginetics, the New Pipe Dream of Modern Mental Make-Believe. Yeah. You know, I see dark days ahead for The Onion.
That's not funny enough for you?
No, it's not that it's not funny. It's flipping hilarious.
No, it's all going to come true. They'll have nothing to think.
They're getting done out of their own oeuvre by reality.
Well, we elevate stupid to it's a virtue.
It's a beautiful thing.
What a country!
I know.
What a country! Well, the only other thing I can think of here is that trickle down economics doesn't work, but trickle down wisdom does. Now, I can't, you know, we will not tolerate ignorance. We will tolerate stupidity. Because that might not be your fault. That might just be, you know, your DNA chromosomes didn't recombine just right. And so your progress is, you're not making as much progress as you ordinarily would be, but that's okay. Because in America, we're okay with that.
On paper.
Results may vary.
If you don't experience conditions like this, but, you know, theoretically we're supposed to, you know, reach out to, we accept natural conditions and distinctions here. Oh, yeah. But I mean, I don't know how you do it, but you have to, it's the wisdom and the vision that has to trickle down from the top. It's never going to, ever going to creep up out of the bottom of the pond. I mean, that's what I was hoping for Obama so much. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, that whole wait-and-see thing is...
Yeah, well, we still give him that pass because he inherited, you know, 30 years of a mess, don't we? He inherited Joe Lieberman. It's a no-hoper.
He inherited me.
They didn't even... Did they take him off of that committee chairmanship he was on ever? What happened with that? I don't even remember.
Are you kidding?
He still got that?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, there's no. There's nothing that could make Harry Reid even bat a cross eyelash at Joe Lieberman. I mean, Joe would have the entirety. Us do the pitchforks and torches thing around Joe's house? No. But Joe would have the entirety of AIPAC doing the pitchfork and torches things around Harry Reid's place yesterday.
Oh, you know it. Do you think that's right? Do you think what you really need is the benign dictatorship? I mean, when you think of people, leaders who really galvanized, I mean, Martin Luther King clearly had it. And Kennedy, although he barely won in 1960, we went to the freaking moon. There's another Onion headline. You know, I'd love to, I don't really feel like any blasphemy tonight, but man lands on effing moon. Holy shit. It's one of my favorite Onion headlines of all time. It's in like type 600-point type. But, I mean, he had that, we all just, you know, rallied round, and we had this national commitment.
Yeah, but at least, and I think it's because Nixon didn't dare let us not try for the moon. Because the wound, you know, even at this distance, the wound is still sore and aching. But in 1969, 6 years later, oh no. And consequently, Nixon said, well, Henry will let the commies go to the liberals go to the moon, and maybe they'll stay there. But you'll notice that shortly thereafter, let's see, Apollo 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, was there a 17?
God, I don't know.
We went to the moon like 6 or 7 times. One of them was abortive. And then Nixon said, well, that's enough of that nonsense. We're spending money on these things that we could be well spending on money that would... I need money to bomb Cambodians into the Stone Age. Oh, wait, Henry, they're already there. Let's bomb them anyway.
Why don't you just keep robbing the Social Security Fund? That seemed to be a limitless supply of cash. I'm just so sick of these people complaining about socialism. Good Lord, folks. Haven't you been paying any attention to what they do with your tax money?
Not much.
It's okay if we bomb them into the Stone Age with your taxes. It's not okay if you know, you fix my broken arm with it. Suddenly, that's communism. I'm just sick of this crap. What else did in the 60s when Medicare popped up? We had Medicare for our senior citizens who came into law. Was that during Johnson's term?
Yes, it was.
Johnson was huge. We had civil rights.
Well, that was the Great Society, and that was him full. There are those among us who would say that was his attempt at extirpation. No. Is it extirpating? Sure. Is it extirpating I'm after? He was trying to make good on previous sins regarding the passing of said JFK. Hence the Great Society.
Well, good and, you know.
But by the same token, let's mention in this same breath that from the moment that that Johnson signed Medicare into law, 11 months later, Harry Truman was the first person given Medicare. 11 months. Now, if we consider the scope of this public option that is being allegedly brought to the floor of the Senate, that Joe says he will hare-lip hell to stop, under the best of circumstances, I think we're still in that scenario where it don't kick in till 2013, so the opt-out won't happen till 2014? That's, let's see, it's 2009, that's 5 times 4, 20, 50. Yeah, that's 225,000 dead Americans.
That's right.
I can do simple math on the fly.
I never could figure out why their scenario was gonna take that long. I don't know. I could not. Nothing else seems to take that long. if you want to just go attack Iraq, I believe we can be doing that in a couple hours. Maybe just penciling in about $3 trillion for that. Something's weird. Maybe I've just been asleep. I just woke up. That's what it is. I was born under a walnut tree last night, and I woke up and I started reading the Declaration of Independence. Right? We're all, we decide that we are a free, self-governing, egalitarian country. Then I picked up the Constitution and explained all how that we were going to implement all that stuff. And then you look around, and then there's this huge
right,
board
but
with this claimer. Note, these represent ideal conditions. If you
experience...
I keep going to that.
It's a beautiful little theme you got working for you there, Reverbo. And by the way, Marty has chimed in and says, yes, there was an Apollo 17. That is, if you believe they weren't all faked.
There's that, too. See, we there you go. That's a beautiful country. We actually have to, you know, put up with people that think like that, too. But that's harmless, you know.
Yeah, that is harmless. I get
it. It used to be, America used to have what was known as lovable cranks. And these are people like Hannity and Limbaugh and your friend who believes that they actually, instead of landing on the moon, they landed somewhere in Utah. But
we're immediately overpowered by green Mormons.
Exactly. Well, that's
and never heard from again.
Yeah, Scientology sort of came out of that, right? That's the religion where there's a flying saucer lands in a desert, and if you don't give.
Well, isn't that why Neil Armstrong's out of step in that one picture of the three astronauts walking across? Oh wait, that's the Beatles.
The Beatles didn't land on the moon, I don't think.
Well, John and George did, but they didn't have to have a machine to get them there.
I am completely confused. Well, I got one more pithy statement, and then I will let you go. I'm on a pith roll here. How about this one? The foundation of our freedom is also the source of our frustration.
Ooh. Ooh.
No, you want to figure out why it's one step forward and two steps back.
And that fits nicely with that Neil Gabler column from several months back. You know, the one that said, you know, the reason that America can't solve great crises is that America was not designed to solve great crises.
Well, we evidently have to live with this incredible dilemma. It's that freedom responsibility thing. You can't seem to legislate responsibility. And so we got millions of people So I can't even imagine how many people listen to this radio show across the universe. Now everybody's thinking we didn't really land on the moon.
But no.
The Beatles landed on the moon instead.
Now, you got Marty all lit up. He said, now wait a minute. I didn't say I believe they were fake. I know people who do. However, I must say that considering the lies of the Bush government in the past 8 years, all government statements must be considered suspect until proof is verified.
Well, Lord knows I never believe you. The official story doesn't usually ring true for me, ever. It's sad, isn't it, though?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like the most recent statement about the helicopter that crashed in Afghanistan. And any helicopter that crashes in Afghanistan... There's immediately a sentence, much like that little sentence, you know, if you experience it. There's a statement that comes from the Pentagon that says, a helicopter crashed today in Afghanistan, and enemy action, and the Afghans didn't shoot it down. No, they didn't. No, really, quit saying that. The Afghans didn't shoot the damned helicopter down. At which point, the entire world goes, you know, we used to read this in Russian Cyrillic script, and it didn't read any better that way either. Yes, they did.
When Walter Cronkite said that to me, I believed him. But were we making... As it turned out, we were right to believe him, too. Because it's here. But now it's all got twisted, turned it. Now it's all done a 180. Now you can't believe any of it. I mean, now, who... The sad part is that most... most people don't have the time or the inclination to seek out the truth. Assuming there is truth on the Internet, assuming there's truth, you know, in West Virginia, assuming there's truth, it takes time. And Americans are very idealistic, and they're, you know, this goes back to, you know, the DDT is going to kill us in 40 years, and if I keep blowing up mountains, I can get a paycheck in 2 weeks. I can be drinking beer in front of my big screen TV in 2 weeks. So I don't give a shit.
Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
Well, that sounds pretty good.
Oh, and by the way, you mentioned when Walter Cronkite said it, you believed it?
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you the other side of that coin. Britt Hume.
Yeah.
On the criticism of Fox by the White House. We may be number one, but there is sort of an insurgent quality of Fox News, and that's kind of our attitude. Hoist the Jolly Roger, pull out our daggers, and look for more throats to slit. This is tremendous fodder for us, my lord. We've been living on it.
Grief. That's what he said?
Hoist a Jolly Roger, pull out our daggers, and look for more throats to slit.
What a class act.
Well, I don't know why I didn't just say hoist the Jolly Roger, load up the sawed-off shotgun, and head for the nearest Unitarian Universalist church. Because that's the reality. But at least we finally now have an admission.
In case it's with our mind. People don't, I love it. I love the idea that we've got the other side. We've got our opponents right where we want them. It is the perfect storm. It couldn't be more marginalized. Couldn't be. It's just, we got everything we want now. We got the executive, we got justice, we got the Senate, we got the House, we've got what? Only one in five people even identify themselves as Republicans. This couldn't be better. And then on the other hand, we have people who, the majority of people just don't have the time or the inclination to move it that extra step. It's begging. It's on the edge of the cliff. All it needs is somebody to just go poof.
Yeah, that one, that one little tiny grain of sand that falls out from under the boulder and then just...
Yeah, exactly. Well, you got an assignment this week. You got to come back with the gold.
Hooey. That's a tall order. I better take a bigger suitcase.
Well, we want only good news, Nicky.
Yeah, we're going to need a bigger boat.
I love it. Gas, and make sure they pay you in gold, too. Oh, God. All right. Make it as personal as you can make it this week.
Yeah, if this ain't personal, can't be found.
All right. And don't forget that disclaimer. It'll come in handy.
I need that in writing.
I can supply that.
Do please. And by the way, thanks for the note last night. I was going to open the program with it, actually, until Joe Lieberman decided to take a big steaming dump on my day.
It was, and you did the right thing. But yes, every now and then, I would say part of the last night's show, definitely on the Greatest Hits album.
Beautiful.
We were crying over here.
You and the possum goddess?
Anyway, keep up the good work.
All right. Later, Reverbo.
All right, man.
Bye now. Critic at large, Reverbo. High priest of the possum goddess. Let's keep it rolling. I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me go inside. All right, that's better.
All better now?
Yeah, that those were the waves at the Horn Palace retreat for special privileged VIP members.
Yes.
It's really a nice place, Bob. Everyone should go.
Oh, there with the waves of the North Atlantic crashing on the rocky shores of Maine.
Yeah, everybody should go, but, oh, man, only the click can go, only the click. But don't worry, I'll send you postcards to people that will never get a chance to go.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like being there. Nothing.
Oh, rub it in, why don't you?
Oh, well, you know. So, this healthcare thing has really got me at a point of, well, let me put it this way. I don't believe anything that I'm told anymore regarding the issue of healthcare, Bob.
Straight down the rabbit hole, huh?
No, it's not so much I don't believe it. I mean, when somebody gives me a number, how much it's going to cost, and what they're going to do for us, and so forth, I like to take that number and I like to triple it, quadruple it, and just tweak the numbers even more, because that's what I believe they want to stick us. They always want to stick us with the bill. I don't believe that.
Well, you know, it's if we were to have universal single payer health care, I would expect to be stuck with the bill. But the things that would come with the cost reductions that would come with single payer health care, my God, we're already paying for it. We're just not getting it.
And that's what I'm talking about. When you have a for profit model, but at the same time, when you have a for profit model of healthcare on healthcare. And you have a citizens and population, and I'm sorry to tell a lot of people who still think this, but a significant amount of this population is going to remain ignorant, no matter what you put in front of them. And it's what I call the dead weight theory. It's what brings us down. It's what doesn't keep us from progressing, and it's also what keeps us bogged down in wars, one after the other, like back-to-back sequels almost. And this brings me to my point about the situation with Obama. Obama, our president, and his cabinet and his administration, they're not Jedi's people. They're not political masterminds. And they have no idea how to handle a war. You want to know why? Because most of them have never even experienced it. Most of them have.
Well, there is that.
Most of them have never. See, so that's why I say Obama isn't a Jedi. I always say this, and I don't care who I get make mad. Obama isn't a Jedi. He isn't Luke Skywalker. He isn't the most brilliant man in the universe. And let's just add insult to injury. He isn't even a Jawa, for Christ's sake. He can't make junk into gold, and that's what Jawas could do.
Is he Lando Calrissian?
No, I don't think he's even Lando Calrissian, because he had Cloud City. Obama doesn't have Cloud City, so there you go.
Well, let me see if I, let me take this down a different road while people stack up my emails as to who Obama is in Star Wars.
Yeah.
He ain't Yoda.
He could be the bounty hunter, Boba Fett.
He could be Boba Fett.
Because he has a rocket missile on his back, and he does have a penchant for hunting down terrorists. He doesn't have the carbonite, though. Is he going to put a Bin Laden in carbonite? But we all know what happened to. I don't want to give a spoiler to Boba Fett, but it doesn't end well for him.
No, but while the comparisons do stack up in my email box.
Yeah.
Let me turn something. Just go in a different, slightly different direction, along the same lines as what you're talking about. And I don't know how to say this more succinctly. And I say this coming from that national security place that seems to be our overarching national fetish, David.
Mm-hmm.
You know, national security, damn it, national security, national security, Your Holiness, national security, 9/11. When it comes to building bombs and missiles and really fast airplanes that can't fly in the rain, cost is no object. Money is no object. And frankly, those things are of limited utility if you don't have a nation to defend. Okay? So along those lines, David, and I'm not saying this in response to you. I'm just saying this as a statement of my own general philosophy. I don't give a good damn how much universal single payer health care costs. Having a well citizenry
is the single most important national security issue that this nation faces. And as a consequence of that, we should apply the same rules to universal single-payer health care that we apply to bombers and bombs and bullets and boats. And cost should not be an issue. We're going to have it. We are going to pay for it because, you know, as we have seen in these little misadventures in Afghanistan and Iraq, you can have all the 23rd century gee golly whiz bang, Johnny speed skates, weapons in the world, but if you don't have enough people to be on the streets and in the valleys and in the mountains and by the streams and in the swamps, you lose. And so as a consequence of that, I don't care what the Congressional Budget Office says it would cost for every single American to have universal single-payer health care. I suspect that the reality of it is that if you imagine an economic model in which the for-profit insurance companies go, and you replace it with universal single-payer health care, then what you find out is it doesn't cost that much. And it doesn't begin to approach the cost of this god-awful misadventure in Afghanistan and Iraq and wherever else we're contemplating misadventures. And it's a net gain for the people of the United States. You cannot, you know, you can't build an infantry out of people who cannot walk. You can't, you know, you cannot make a battle-hardened battalion out of people who can't pass a stress test. And frankly, this is an overarching thing that probably goes beyond health care and into the realms of how we go about the day-to-day business of being us and what we eat and how we eat it and how we train doctors and how we treat food and how we treat each other.
Well, I do think part of the problem is the fact that healthcare in general, I think here's where I differ a bit from the Horn community and most of the people. I don't trust when someone tells me this is how the system is going to work and this is how it's going to be and you're going to pay into this system, and then you see who's attached to the bill and you see a long line of parasites. And you just see add-on after add-on, and it's almost like it's meant to make us scramble, which it is. It's meant to make us scramble. It's meant to make us crawl our way. And another thing, one thing that really gets me about this is the fact that I detest this, Bob, is when a liberal portion of the audience, I'll use John's term, says, well, we got to take care of the undocumented citizens. Well, the problem with that is nobody really wants to take care of the undocumented citizens, foreigners, i.e., because they want to treat them like animals, Bob. Because just like the Rahsaan Roland Kirk song, we keep them undocumented for a reason. That's volunteer slavery. That way we can keep paying them under the table. They won't get the health care. And that's and
they won't be on the workers' comp rolls, and they won't be liable to receive unemployment compensation, and they can't demand minimum wage.
And that's part of the problem I have with we need to do something about the undocumented citizens in this country not getting the proper wages and anything like that. If we can somehow
look at the amount of money and you know, one of the things that the right wing loves to prattle on about, David, is that
them illegal aliens, they make all that money and then they go to the Western Union and they send it all back to Mexico. There's millions of dollars being drained out of the American economy going back to Mexico every day, right?
You've heard it. I know you have.
Right.
Well, instead of that, let's take the people who are here
welcome to this, them, welcome them to this country with open arms and say, but it comes with strings attached. And they're the same strings that are attached to the rest of us. And it's called FICA. And it's called payroll withholding. And it's called Social Security. And it's called Medicare and Medicaid. And you're on the hook for it with the rest of us.
And that's what I'm getting at.
And then if you do that at the same time that you lower the Social Security retirement age to 55 years old, something that I was arguing for a couple of years ago that Tom Hartman picked up on as well.
Right.
If you do that, and you raise and you eliminate the ceiling on Social Security taxed earnings, and just say, welcome to America, this benefits all of us, problem solved.
Well, you know, Bob, the whole thing about the immigration process, it's always struck me as there's a reason why it's so slow and so bureaucratic, and I don't think it's because that's the way it has to be. I believe that we do live in a volunteer slavery society, and we need a certain segment of the population that are undocumented citizens. And I'm beginning to think that they never intend to give citizenship to a lot of people. They make them keep jumping through these loopholes. When to me, it should be as simple as, do you love this country? Do you want to pay taxes? Well, do you believe in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence? Do you think this is a we society versus a me society? Do you think it is? Do you believe in a we society? Do you want to make this work and try to help us? Okay, congratulations, you're American, but we don't do that. Instead, we make them jump through loophole after hoop after hoop, like a trained circus dolphin, or rather a SeaWorld dolphin. And I don't know. I have a big problem with the fact that a lot of the Democrats and a lot of the liberals want to encourage the same process, the same system, ICE, all of the.
I have a problem with a lot of so-called mainstream Democrats with a lot of issues. I have, you know, whether it's the war or, you know, the blue dogs or health care or, you know, fundamental issues of basic freedom as set forth in the Constitution. I got lots of problems. But you know what? I think with enough popular support, we can solve those problems for the Democratic Party. The Republican Party is a dead letter, David. You know, they are. They're just a rump. They're the last tattered the danglings of the old Confederacy. A bunch of cranky old doughy white guys, and they're done. Their sun is setting. But if we don't manifest real and substantive change inside the Democratic Party right now, starting yesterday, then we're going to have the same old problem again, and it'll devolve into the same place that the Republicans are now.
You really believe that we can... Because, again, this is something I guess I disagree with a lot of people when it comes to the Democratic Party. Do you really believe we can turn around the Democratic Party with the current population of citizens that we have now? I think most of America is brain dead. I hate to say that. In terms of what they care about, what they're passionate about, what's important to them, it seems like they miss the boat every single time. And we don't have a nation of critical thinkers. And this is why I keep saying the deck continues to get stacked and stacked. And just when you think you figured out the whole deck is stacked and all the rig points, more of the deck is stacked in that way. I mean, let's look at something that happened. I give kudos to Matthew Ho today, who came out against the Obama administration and said, I don't understand why we're here. I don't understand what is the point of this mission. No one wants to give me any answers. And you know what he said, Bob? This is why I think we have a lot of bandits on D.C. and that why we have a lot of bandits in the Obama administration. He said they tried to offer him a bribe for a job during an interview on CNN. Oh, you can't do that. Don't go out and say that. No. We'll give you a better position. But I don't believe in this mission. And I know that the people on the ground in Afghanistan restless as well. And they don't believe that this is a fruitful mission, and they don't believe that this is, they believe that this is a full-blown occupation. The citizens of Afghanistan, and nobody's giving me any answers. And they didn't have an answer for him. And then they didn't think he was going to come out this way either, Bob. They didn't think he was going to. They didn't think he had the balls to do this. And that's why I don't like. That's why I'm not really liking the Democratic Party. That's why I'm not really liking anyone having to do with the Obama administration. Because this is the truth. We're going to continue to go into Afghanistan. We're going to continue to blow shit up. We're going to continue, and to continue to put my brand and my stamp and my ex next to a Democrat, after a while, you can't do that.
Yeah, but come to the realization that the way the Constitution is set up does not do, and I know people don't like it when I say this, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff I don't like that's factual, too. The Constitution, as it is currently set up, does not admit for the rise of third-party politics. It admits for it tolerates the rise of a third party that supplants the weaker second party, and you're seeing that now. The progress has been glacial within the scope of the human ability to comprehend because of the short nature of our existence.
Right.
But you are seeing it, for instance, in this contest between the Conservative Party and the Republican in New York State. You're seeing it in the rise of the Ron Paulistas, the so-called libertarians who are little more than Republicans who are pissed off because they can't get high. You're seeing it in that, okay? You might be seeing it somewhat in the Greens, but... And this is just my position, and again, it'll piss people off.
Right.
If the Greens want to change this nation, we desperately need their energies inside the Democratic Party. Because that weight can shift that, and go read about it, that weight can shift the Overton window back over to where we need it to be. I like Green Party politics. I absolutely respect it. I've voted for a Green candidate a time or two. But I do not engage myself in the fruitless notion that there are going to be three parties competing for power in the United States when it's simple, it's not set up to be that way. You know, it started out, David, in a way that could be that way when the Constitution said that the winner of the presidential ballot, the winner of the Electoral College vote, will be the president. And then it originally said, and the guy who comes in second will be the vice president. Consequently, you get John Adams, vice president to George Washington. You get Thomas Jefferson, vice president to John Adams. And then ultimately you get Aaron Burr, Vice President Thomas Jefferson, and by that time, three presidencies, everybody looked around and went, oh, crap, this is not working. Because what you wound up is having a guy second in command whose policies were frequently at cross purposes with the guy who was president, and it just created what they deemed to be a miserable experience. So that got checked and that got fixed. And we wound up with running mates. I mean, Jesus Christ, can you imagine if John McCain was vice president to Barack Obama? Just open that little door to that little closet of horrors for just a crack and just look in and see all the spiders and snakes and everything scurrying around. Jesus, close that.
But you see, Bob, eventually it's going to be that. And we are having a train wreck in Iraq. And we're having a train wreck in Afghanistan. And yes, it would be worse, but eventually we're going to have to come to that. We're going to have to come to that point in our history. We can't keep running from it. That's what I'm saying. That's why we can't just, we have to change things. We have to vote for the lesser of two evils. We'll put the D. And again.
But what else are you going to put?
You have to, eventually you're going to have to vote your conscience.
But voting your conscience, if we were talking about that lesser of two evils things, that voting your conscience thing means stay home in November.
Well, not necessarily. What I'm saying is...
Because I can vote my conscience all day long. for a Green Party candidate. I voted my conscience for governor this past election here in West Virginia. My conscience is not governor of West Virginia, and the mountains are still blowing up.
Well,
on the other hand, however, if we had, and I don't mean to piss people off, but it's a fact, if we had all that energy that went into that third partyism inside the Democratic Party, raising hell and making it certain that people understood, we're not going to tolerate you. We will actively work against you. Not in November when we don't have a freaking prayer. We're going to work against you in the primary, and we're going to start beating your ass. Then you'll get changes in policy.
Too many broken promises, too many lies to the people. See, that's not going to happen. The third party is going to continue to grow. And I know that makes a lot of Democrats pissed.
Well, no, it doesn't make me mad. It ain't going to work.
Oh, I understand that.
It can't work. It's not that I philosophically disagree. It's that I recognize that within the parameters of the structure which is established here, David, it won't work.
I understand what you're saying, but this party, to me,
what a third party serves as in a presidential election, what a third party serves as if it can get enough votes,
yeah,
it serves as a lever or a warning to whomever of the two parties wins. Okay? The classic example is the presidential bids of Eugene V. Debs in the early 20th century. Because of the rumblings that Eugene V. Debs created, in part, you wind up with the social changes that you get in the FDR administration. Okay? You could also say that Ross Perot served as a warning to Bill Clinton not to get all liberal. Plus the fact that, the 1994 midterm elections, and see, that's what's coming. The 2010 midterm elections are coming. And there is not, and I'm not lecturing at you. I hope you understand. This is just a discussion. The 2010 midterm elections are coming, and a lot of us who are still registered Democrats, like me, are sick of this mugwump brand of politics that is practiced in Washington, D.C. by people who call themselves Democrats but share virtually no political ideology with me and with us. Well, we're past time to be working on that.
Right.
Because we don't need a third-party candidate running in November who's going to get beat either by the Republican or the Democrat. Because the third parties in the individual congressional districts have not built the base sufficient to win elections. We need, and I'm speaking on the left side of things, I suppose, crazy leftist me wanting people to go to the doctor. I thought that was just kind of normal and middle of the road, but I guess not. I'm commie. We need that energy. We need that energy of the Green Party in the primary season. Putting up candidates to run against these incumbent mugwump blue dog Democrats and beat their ass or at least scare the piss out of them so that they understand when they go into November, you don't get us unless you speak to our issues. How do you think the Republican Party, such as it was and is, and I'm not offering it as a model, but how do you think the Republican Party wound up where it is, where somebody like Richard Nixon would be deemed a liberal Democrat by the Republican Party as it stands now? Where somebody like Barry Goldwater would be deemed a liberal by the Republican Party as it exists now? It was pushed there by activists on the hardcore right-wing side who dragged the Republican Party, kicking and screaming, just to the right of Mussolini. Now, by the same token, the Democratic Party, we can either sit around and piss and moan about it, or we can get to work and we can drag it, kicking and screaming, back to some land that we recognize as normal. Because they are verging to the right because they are responding to what they think is some sort of national movement to the right. How many times have we, I mean, after Barack Obama was elected, you know, scarcely a little more than a year ago, how many times did we hear them say, right-wingers say, well, you know, it's, well, you know, that one may have won, but it's still a conservative nation. Horse feathers. But they created that impression. And we are, I think, in line with what Reverbo was saying, a very impressionable people.
Bob, I completely agree with you, but the problem is we've lost the anti-war left, and we're losing a big portion of the other part of the left that really wanted radical change. We're not going to have the momentum in the 2010 election to really get what it is that we want as a nation, because so many people have been deceived, and they're working on emotions. So there's no way to drag the Green Party candidates. There's nothing you can give them, because what they're seeing in Afghanistan right now and what they're seeing in Iraq right now in the daily news, what are you going to say to them, Bob? You can't say anything to them. You think Obama's going to he already said he wasn't going to change directions. I mentioned
I'm
that.
Disgusted with it.
I know. That's the problem, Bob.
But you know what? I guess it's the way my political mind works. Because I'm disgusted with it, I have to stand in toe-to-toe and fight for what I believe in. I don't stick my thumb in my mouth and run off and pout in the corner because I don't like it.
I don't think it's so much running in the corner and, they're doing it based on conviction. Eventually, this is what I say to a lot of Democrats. Eventually, you're going to have to come to terms with what direction this country's leading into.
I came to terms with it a long time ago. I know me some fascism when I see it, and I hate it because I got family in the dirt from fighting fascism the last time.
I understand that, and that's why a lot of Green Party input.
And so I'm not willing to leave the fight. I'm not willing to quit the field. I'm tired of being part of a party that says, well, I didn't get what I want, so I'm leaving.
Well, that's the reality, though. You see it, and I see it. And that's why it's going to be almost impossible to bring back this faction of the left back. What are you going to give them with? What, Bob? What?
Yeah, but wait. Look at the great energy that's been stirred up by Dennis Kucinich and by Representative Alan Grayson. Look at how excited we get every time some Democrat actually stands up and sticks to his guns against one of these no-good the proto-fascist conservatives.
That's true, and that's good, but that's candy thrown out. We know what's going to happen after that. We know that there's corporate dominance control on our airwaves. The very notion that
But that's a different animal.
To me,
corporate control of the airwaves is a different animal. It's not going to be solved by the fairness doctrine. It's not going to be solved by political action, with the possible exception of the repeal of the media ownership rules, of you know, which I wholly and strongly support. What's going to change that is when Democrats, who call themselves Democrats, who aren't in political office but have the substantial bank accounts, realize and look up and get tired of having their asses whipped every day on the air by the likes of Britt Hume, who, for God's sakes, put this on the wall. What we say at Fox, hoist a Jolly Roger, pull out our daggers, and look for more throats to slit. Now when the Democratic money that pours tons and tons of money into this cause and that cause finally gets around to realizing that supporting all those causes will get a hell of a lot easier if they'll win the battle of ideas on the front end. When that happens, then a lot of the other things that you're talking about will happen as well. But they are separate creatures. There are problems that are solved politically, and there are problems that are solved in the so-called private sector by money. You know, I think one of the reasons, you know, you're forever hearing the right-wingers say, well, you know, damn Democrat, all they ever want to do is throw money at a problem. Well, maybe the only reason we want to throw money at a problem, I don't know what else there is to throw. Maybe the only reason we want to throw money at a problem is that, you know, money usually solves them.
How many problems would be solved here at the Horn with money? You know, we've got a small army of people busting their humps on a volunteer basis who have never been paid a blessed dime.
And
all they want to do is see us finally quit sweating from month to month our own survival.
And you know what? A lot of if it's the progressive left wanted to really fund, this is why I think a lot of this is a sham, Bob. If they wanted to fund and get their voice out to a larger audience, it would be a drop in the proverbial bucket to do that for you guys. But they don't. And this goes into even a bigger issue, which is what remember what I said about legitimizing radicals? Making Sarah Palin into a clown and coming out with a parody book on the same day, that's not going to get you anything, except it's just going to brand Sarah Palin.
Somebody who was on the inside crowd said, "Hey, I want to do this," and the money said, "Go for it."
Yes, but my
and
but
it's
my,
and it's not what you know, it's who you know. You know, our buddy Glenn in the UK said the other day.
He said,
"I suspect it's a case of the old adage that charity begins at home and usually stays there." You know, fortunate for us, that is not the thinking that's been adopted by folks who share their time with us at the Horn, because we're still here after 4 years. But that is an attitude that obtains in the wider world of so-called Democratic Party politics. And it is the absolute God's honest truth. You know, where the right wing says, you want to fill the airwaves with 3 hours of hate and vitriol every day, and you're gonna wear the hell out of Democrats and be a partisan flack and hack? Here's a few million dollars. See if you can make it work. On the other hand, on our side, we go begging.
I hear what you're saying. But see, my point is that the left, what I meant when the going rouge and the going rogue thing and legitimizing radicals and all of that, is a big portion of the left loves to engineer these boogeymen that we have to deal with. To make us buy into this political perspective, and to continue buying their publications and media. That's the way they keep us interested. Bob, what I'm saying is there literally people who are triggering threats out there from the rights? From the right wing, making them bigger than life, and then we have to deal with them. That's why you're not getting your funding. This is why I all think this is a fucking sham. Remember, Arianna Huffington was a Republican strategist.
Yep.
Remember that, people. Do you think she really is for the people? No.
Well, some would say that she had her road to Damascus moment, and
She still drives a Hummer. She still does. And she wants to talk about the...
Maybe that's because she's an incredibly bad driver.
Oh, maybe. But my point is that's why you're not getting your funding. The reason why you're not getting your funding is because if there is a sea change and we do become a better nation, it's not profitable for a lot of the left. And Robert Perry talked about that in his column as well. And this is why I say, people, watch out for a big portion of this left. These people who focus on effing Sarah Palin are not your friggin' friends. They're out to put the focus on a clown, for God's sakes. Instead of talk about real issues while people are dying. Our priorities are messed up. And again, people, that's why a lot of progressive and liberal causes never get off the ground. Because there's a lot of people on the left who want to keep us in the dirt. Because they're making fist after fist of cash and revenue. Understand that. Huffington Post is not your friend. A lot of these places are not your friend. They're all tied and colluded together to trigger boogeymen. So we talk about them, And how many hours have we spent on effing Sarah Palin? We need to get this straight, Bob. We need to understand. All of these people, they go in that diner together, they sit down, and they have their lobster and shrimp and hummingbird canapé together. While we keep getting the shaft, and we keep losing more and more and more. And you know who's doing that? Not the right-wing people. The left-wing is doing that. Think about it.
Well, check this out. This email just in from one of your comrades in the Brotherhood of Davidness.
Yeah.
You're one of the other Davids, David in Tennessee. I think we've got three Davids tonight so far. We're on a roll. David in Tennessee has said, along the lines of what you're discussing, I have hated the We Don't Do Media bullshit for fucking ever. The snobs that wrote books and pieces in Harper's that got results from their efforts had their success because 8 years earlier, kids gave blood and careers in the streets. The academic Brie Eater went to the awards ceremony on Abby Hoffman's and Bobby Seale's back, and then the bastard wouldn't even tip them. And that's the truth. And you know what? It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed. I'll say this now. I hope I'm not pissing anybody off. But, you know, I know, you know, every night at the close of the program, I reference the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. And they are. That's not some slogan. That's not made up. I know the lives they lead. I know the troubles they face. I know the straight upslope nature of their existence. And I know that in the face, and I know that they stand and look a billion-dollar industry square in the eye. And they don't blink. All the while sweating whether or not they're going to be able to make next month's rent, power, the water and sewer, garbage, and grocery bills, and buy gasoline. Because of the pittance that they make in the effort. While, on the other side, the huge national and international green groups raise millions of dollars on their asses. And that's not ingratitude, but it is damned well a fact. And what I'm trying to lay out here, David, is that this is an endemic problem that isn't just media, isn't just environmental, isn't just labor, isn't just, women's rights or gay rights. Every problem that the left has is a problem that the entire left has. Every solution that the left may reach is a solution that the entirety of the left may reach, but only in that moment when the left realizes that it's all one struggle. Now, I know that may sound just a little bit too doctrinaire or a little bit too ideologically pure for some people, but it's the truth. You know, if you're living below a mountaintop removal job and you're breathing micronized, aerosolized silica dust and diesel fumes and poison every day, then it's that, then, and you happen to be a female of childbearing age, guess what? It's not an environmental issue anymore. It is, by God, a feminist issue. Because you have gone, because corporate America has taken you to a place that is at the very heart of what it means to be a woman. At the very heart of what it means to be the half of the species that gives life, when that ability to give life has been profoundly compromised. When you live at the foot of that mountain and you breathe that garbage, and you believe in workers' rights and their right to organize and be in a union, suddenly it's not an environmental or a labor issue anymore. When your ability to even breathe or keep from growing cancerous garbage inside your body compromises your ability to go out and organize workers. It's all one issue. Sorry, preachy, I know. I apologize, David. I did that on your dime. Me
no,
bad.
No, no, no. I understand. I want to give other people a chance to talk. So I just want to say I picked up another fundraiser for
Great.
Bay. So we're going to plan and plot and strategize on how we can get more funding per week. And like I said, people, if you want to hit me up, it's at hornauction@gmail.com. And don't think it, you can't do it, because I personally know that you can do it, and you can do it. However, whatever you have that's around you, I encourage people to get involved. And this keeps it away from having to worry about passing the hat around. And to me, that's a good thing. And one of the things I was thinking about, Bob, was wouldn't it be great if we had a separate fund, and also we could write up proposals. And I know it's possible, Bob. I know it's possible, because there's a lot of companies out there to try to attempt to get the horn off the grid and self-sustaining.
Oh, devoutly to be wished.
I know it's possible, Bob, and I know with the right proposal and the right people on board, if we were to brainstorm together, the horn community, and put together a proposal, I think a lot of companies would jump just at the chance of being the premier, being the first, and being part of the pioneering side of media that we're on right now. So I wouldn't rule it out, people, because there's a lot of companies out there that would that are just dying to get exposure.
You know what? Every day with every new listener, we get a little bit closer to finding who that is. And that's
the
truth.
Bob, all I can say is keep up the fight. And people, if you want to reach me, and you want to talk a little bit about this, on how to get started on eBay or any other kind of fundraising, hit me up at hornauction@gmail.com, and I will respond swiftly.
Wonderful. Thank you, David, and thank you for opening so many doors to conversation this evening.
All right, no problem, Bob. Later.
Take care. Bye now. And let's see. Let's keep things rolling along. No. 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 All of a sudden, all six lines lit up, but there's nobody there. Huh. Weird. Well, try back in. Anybody who wants to get in on the conversation, do so. I'm beginning to wonder if we've got some sort of little the demon inside the telephone system. Oh, that's just great. The one thing that we can't do without, the one thing that must not go down. But let's see if this actually turns into a phone call. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hello.
It's Ange.
Oh, hey, Ange, how are you?
I'm good. God, I can't believe I just called and I got in.
Well, everything lit up and then everything went away, so.
Wow. Well, you know, I've been thinking, and I always love when David calls in. You know, when you talk about, you know, supporters that are supposed to be leftists and, you know, the famous people that won't have anything to do with your radio station. Has anybody ever tried Mike Judge? It's like everybody on the horn loves Idiocracy, worship. You know, not worship, but, you know, understand.
Okay, only I worship, but, yeah, I understand.
But you know what I mean. It's like, have you ever tried him? Maybe he's.
I have no idea how you'd even begin to get through the layers of flappers that stand between him and people like us.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know, but, you know, I feel for, you know, what David says, and it's like.
Yeah, and I don't, I'm not.
I feel. I'm going to lose. I'm, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm losing hope of any, you know, sense out here in America. You know, I live in Arkansas, and it's, you know.
A lot like living in West Virginia, yes.
Yeah, even though I do live in a college town, which, you know, there's a lot of more logical people politically here, but then, you know, there's not. It's like these people have been trained for all their lives, and they, you know, record all their TiVo stuff all the time, and it's like they just lose consciousness of what's going on in the world. And the Americans have been programmed that way.
Well, I think there's a cogent argument that you're absolutely correct in your assessment.
You know, just like, you know, a lot of people call in and say, and it's like some of us, you know, I work hard, and just sometimes the daily grind of life and trying to work just to stay alive, you know, depresses you. And when you try to do something and you have no feedback or people look at you like you're crazy, you feel like, you know, what can you do but just live your life and try to be as happy as you
can? But you know what? Where you are, yeah. Ange, where you are in Arkansas, where I am in West Virginia, where the folks I know in Georgia and Alabama are, all of that is a function of the fact that the Southern liberals have been left by the wayside. Well, you know, y'all live there. It's too dang bad.
We're crazy. Yeah, and we're crazy.
And, you know, people write books called... Right, but people write books called Whistling Past Dixie that argue that the Democratic Party should just ignore the hell out of the South and pretend it doesn't exist and leave liberals in the South to the tender mercies of their conservative overlords. And I despise that crap, Ange.
I do, too. I really do. And it is not fair, you know?
I mean, do you know why Don Siegelman had to...
America! Sometimes I feel like, you know, we're in a whole different country, a whole different...
Well, you remember the map, the cute little map that came out in 2004 that showed the United States of America and then Jesus Land? Remember that? And all the old Confederate states and Oklahoma and so forth were Jesus Land?
Yeah, and they're hypocrites. They just believe everything their little, you know, Jesus people say, and they don't look for the truth. They don't look for the facts. And they're not really, they're like in a cult that's not even worshiping what they're worship, you know, what Jesus wrote. You know?
Yes.
Around.
Well, you know, look, a minute ago, Ange, I mentioned Don Siegelman. You know, the governor of Alabama who had the hell persecuted out of him. Well, do you know why he had to be stopped? Why he had to be pursued at all costs by the Republican Party? Because he was a successful, honest-to-God liberal in the belly of the right-wing beast. And he was, you know, and he was making inroads. He could have been a national political figure had not the Bush administration moved in to stop him at all costs.
That gives me the chills up and down my spine. I'm literally, you know, I just can't believe what this country is coming to. And if something don't get done really quick, it's only going to get worse. And I hate to be a pessimist, but it scares me. You know, because no one cares. They're in la-la land, you know. Foreclosing and get as much money as they can and on credit. You know, I was a victim of credit back when I was in my, you know, early 20s. And I realized, you know, what it was all about. It's like you spend $300. If you don't pay it off, you're going to spend $1,000. And I haven't used credit since probably the 1996. I live, and I've always lived, like, if I don't have the money for it, I can't afford it, and I live simply. And I live, like, a mile from where I work. I don't even shop. I'm in Walmart land, okay? I have, like, two super centers, like, 2 miles away from me. And, you know, another, like, Walmart neighborhood store, not too far.
Yeah, you live in a place, Ange, where if Walmart don't carry it, you don't need it.
People make fun of me because I say, well, I might go to Walmart once a year. I mean, they go to Walmart 2 or 3 times a week. I'll go to the local place and pay a little bit more just because, you know, it's a way closer. You know, instead of driving 3 miles, I drive a half a mile or something like that. But I feel that my money is going somewhere locally.
Yeah.
You know, and not... And I live very simply, and I've been made fun of forever on it. But then, you know, I don't have a lot of this overhead and stress that a lot of these people do. That, you know, they get married, they think they need to buy a house just because they have a kid, and they get over their head, and then they file bankruptcy or can't pay their, you know what I mean? Because the house is... There's a lot more money involved in owning a house than people think. There's a personal property tax. There is the maintenance to the house. There, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and,
I do.
And so, unless you're a lot, you know, or Mr. Fix-It, or know someone that's Mr. Fix-It, and, you know, you have this money, and people drive, you know, 30 miles to get to work. But Arkansas is, you know, I'm a graphic artist. They say, oh, you're a graphic artist, you should make a lot of money. But I don't, because the wages here in Arkansas, unless you're a lawyer or some kind of high corporate person that works at Tyson's that, you know, don't do nothing, really. I mean, you don't make a lot of money here. And
you're not supposed to. That's why it's Arkansas.
I like it. Well, yeah, I know, but I like it here in Fayetteville in a way because I was born and raised in downtown Kansas City. You know, when I was a teenager in the 80s, you know, there was gangs, drive-by shootings. It was very scary there. And my uncle was even killed by a gang member walking home from the bus from work. But I feel safer here in a way. And I don't know, maybe that's why I'm still living here. But even though sometimes it ticks me off when I see the local commercials, because I do not have, I haven't paid for cable. I will never pay for cable. I just pay for my internet. And I have this, one of those digital boxes, and I get some of the local stations. And sometimes when I'm watching TV, you know, the commercials that come on. It's like against the health care reform. And there's these old people like, I don't want my health care taken away. And I don't want this voted, you know, against the health care reform. And, you know, all these clean coal advertisements that are on. And, you know, it's like, I think I told you this last time, but I'm not sure. Local news a couple months ago, they took a poll in Arkansas, and people would rather have Rush Limbaugh as president than Obama. All right, okay, how insane is that?
Lots.
It is crazy. I mean, and that's just to the point where it's like that. It's like this here, and I'm sure it's like this that everywhere, you know, in every state, in a way.
Well, you've got some in every state, but in places like Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, West Virginia, you've got a lot more of them in higher concentration.
They're just brainwashed. And when you try to say something, deactivate the brainwash, just like you said a while ago, like put a little bit of stream of consciousness into them, you know, it does not work.
Yeah, not so good, no.
You cannot go into the stream of consciousness because your consciousness, look, I can't even pronounce it, is so warped that they have no idea what consciousness really is. And it's frustrating. And, you know, what can a person do? It's like you said, it's like most of us liberal people, we aren't, you know, mean, and I've always been the kind of person that, just like I told you before, I'm not a well speaker. I have problems when I talk out loud. I always have. I even went to...
Well, you're doing fine so far.
But I'm more of a visual and kind of a thought person. But it's just crazy because I want to do more here where I live. And, I've tried. Remember when I made those flyers a year or so ago and passed them out? It's like, I don't feel like any of that helped. Even though I try to tell people, they look at me like I'm crazy or something. But I don't know. Maybe I need some kind of script. I know that sounds kind of retarded, but, because I was in the theater way back, but I always had a script to go by, so, and I'm not the best writer, but.
Yeah, it's that ad-lib thing that'll bite you.
Yeah, but, my imagination runs wild most of the time, and I've been thinking about this forever. And it's like, wouldn't it be cool if we had like a big town where just like all of us that thought the same and with all these different talents and stuff got together and only lived in this town and we could like rule the world from one town or something, all the liberals and get all the money together of all the liberals and just go for it. All the talents of all the people and all the money.
Well, there are states in the union where that happens. You've just never seen it because you're not there.
I guess not. But it's just crazy.
That's kind of something that we've been talking about tonight, Ange, is that you can't just abandon the South and say that, there will be little liberal ghettos in the South. And they'll just and the liberals in the South will just have to get on as best they can, because we're gonna let redneck state, red state, the right wing conservative Republican state governments below the Mason-Dixie line, we're just gonna let them opt out of the public of the public option, and to hell with everybody down there.
There's a lot of people, especially older people, that are in this mindset that they're never going to change. They'll have the hate in them forever. They'll have, even people that you did not even think of. It's just crazy. People that you think are intelligent and have some kind of wit, you'd think they would be intelligent enough to see the truth.
And there they go, proving themselves all insane again.
Yeah. People that are highly respected, that are intelligent, they can, spew off facts, but then when it comes to the certain facts, they're all twisted and warped, I don't know. It boggles my mind. And, sometimes I know I haven't been around lately. And mainly it's because I had an experience when I went to Colorado in July where I almost drowned in a white river rafting thing.
Ooh.
I even had a gigantic mark to prove it when my first attempt when I high-sided on the roughest part of the Upper Taylor near Crested Butte. It's like I was wondering, thank God for the life jacket, because I would have been dead. And I'm an excellent swimmer also. And I've been on canoeing, rides here in Arkansas for a long time. And my first attempt of rescue, they threw out this little skinny rope, maybe like a quarter of an inch, 3/8 of an inch thick or something like that. And I wrap it around myself, and the current is so pulling me, and they're pulling me, and I feel like the rope is going to cut me in half at one point, and I had to let go, and then I go down the river again, and the current kept pulling me down. I did everything I was supposed to do, but, I had this thing where I'm like, oh, my God, is this the way I'm going to die? And I end up finding a raft, and they eventually pulled me up and stuff. But I had this, my stomach all swelled up, and then I had God, this jolly, oh gosh. It was like about an inch and a half thick, gigantic bruise from one side all the way around the front to the other side. My mom is like...
But it was a bruise. Yeah, but at that point, it becomes a bruise worth having.
And this happened afterwards, but I wasn't even thinking about my, my internal organs maybe being damaged. I was just happy to be alive. And it kind of opened my eyes in a way, thinking I can't be depressed all the time, because I'm a worrywart. And, I care about things like everybody here in the Horn cares about. But, when you see your life flash in front of your eyes, sometimes you just want to maybe have fun a little bit.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
And, I've spent all my life worrying and stressing about stuff, and I just need to have fun. Well, that's kind of one of my little experiences that happened to me. But, after when I saw, the bruise and stuff, it was a red mark at first, but then I had, this gigantic bruise for, a week and a half or more, And, I met my sister there that lives in Seattle, and she's like, when she sees me going down, she's like, oh, my God, if Angela dies, Mom's going to kill me.
The sibling thought process, it never fully goes away.
My sister was thinking that when I was, and I went down for a long time. I was getting ready to pass out because the water was, 30, it felt like it was, Well, it was maybe 40 degrees, but it felt like it was 20 degrees. It really did. It was cold. But that's one of my little stories that I had for something that happened to me. But it's a weird experience. And when you see it happen on TV, when someone's, going down this rapid river, you don't think it's as bad as it is, but unless you experience it.
It's bad. Now, see, we've got whitewater rafting is the big thing around here where I live, okay? It's the heart and soul of our tourism industry. I won't go whitewater rafting. I just won't. I don't ride roller coasters, and I won't go whitewater rafting because I'm a big old chicken.
Oh, I love roller coasters.
See? Well, I always figure if I want to go fast and be afraid I'm about to die, there's lots of coal trucks on the highway, and I got an automobile.
The weird thing about it is, I was like, I didn't want to go. It was the day after the 4th of July, Sunday. It was on a Sunday, and I was telling my sister and her husband and my niece and the other two people that were coming with us. He's like, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I'm not going. I'm staying here and going down to the horse ranch, with Clark. And we were like, no, you're going. You're going. And then after that happened, I'm like, see, I had a premonition, and I didn't want to go, but you guys made me go. And they didn't make me go. I could have just said no.
Nah, they peer pressured you.
It was weird.
They peer pressured you.
But actually, the raft, when I saw the raft when I first went, it didn't look like a raft. It looked more like a... And my friend Andy from England described this very eloquently. That don't look like a raft. That looks like a dinghy. Because I have the pictures, posted on my Facebook page and my MySpace page. Because there was, this photographer that... They go on the edge of the river in certain points and take pictures of
you. Oh, sure. Yeah, and they'll shoot movies of you, and they're available for sale back at the gift shop, and yeah.
Yeah, and it was the pictures were half of them I were in, and then the other half I wasn't in.
No, that's about when they were calling you Bob, because that's what you were doing in the river, you bobbing.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I was just happy I didn't slam into a rock or anything. But I was keeping my feet in front of me, so if I did slam into something, my legs would, or, I was following all the stuff, but they told us to do if it happened. But yeah, it was scary. And I don't know. Drowning is, I guess I would rather drown than burn to death. But
what a hell of a choice.
Yeah, I know. But if I had to choose, I guess. But yeah, it was scary. And I've always been a water person. I love the water. But yeah, that's kind of strange. But I don't want to take up and eat up all the rest of your time. I want someone else to call.
Okay, well, good hearing from you, Ange. And, I mean, under the circumstances, really good hearing from you.
So, okay, remember the challenge that happened last week?
Yes, and you responded very kindly to it.
Even though I gave like a couple weeks before, I had to do it. So, how many people ended up going to, like, what is it, Sunday or Monday? Because it was two people. There was that one guy, and then there was that lady, and I can't remember their name.
Maura and Michael and Texas Betsy.
Okay. So, did it go good?
We're not done yet, but it's going quite well. The part of it that Michael and Texas Betsy put together is done. And the part of it that Maura initiated has until Friday to get done.
Yeah, I just had to go because I only had, like, you know, $15 left in my PayPal account. So I'm like, I can't do much with this other than just donate more. And it seems like every time I have money, I just donate to you guys in there. And I feel like that's the best thing because I basically use it for eBay.
Well, you know,
anything on eBay anymore. So
yeah, it's like we said Friday night. If you're going to do something stupid with your money, do something stupid with us.
That's how I feel. Okay, rather than go to a bar and meet shallow people that just want to use you for something, you might as well just buy your six-pack of beer, come home, listen to the head-on radio network, and spend that extra $15 on you guys. And go in the chat room and chat with all the beautiful people that are in the chat room that are always nice, you know, and they're beautiful people. I love you all. Head on Radio Network is the best thing that's happened to me since I've been living in Arkansas. And I just found you guys when I was goofing around with trying to find different spoken word radio stations on my iTunes at work. Because, you know, I'm sitting in front of my computer all day. And when I started listening, I listened to Air America. But then after I found you guys, I think you guys are way better than Air America.
Bless your heart. We try.
And you, Bob, I love Guy James. I love Guy James. And I love Mark Levine and John Fox, even though I don't get to call in ever because it seems like I'm never home on Sundays. But you are so entertaining. And you're like, you know, the thespian-like person that does all the drama and acting and funny stuff. I just think
that I'm just working it all out of my system here. I'm a frustrated thespian. That's exactly what it is.
The world needs to know that.
You've blown my cover, Ange.
I do, because I just love you. And, you know, but I love everybody at the Horn. They're awesome. But, all right, well, I'm going to let you go so another person can call. And you have the lines going now?
Yeah, we're cooking. I'll try the next line if it hasn't reverted to a busy signal.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you later.
And it's good talking to you, dear, and so glad you made it out of the river alive.
Yeah. All right, bye.
All right, bye. Yeah, no kidding. I will not go whitewater rafting around here, and I've taken no small amount of grief for it. But by the same token, they sell T-shirts in the little gift shops here. You know, when the folks from out of state come to go down the whitewater in West Virginia. And the T-shirt says, "Paddle faster, I hear banjo music." The first time I saw that, I confess, I giggled. And then I got to thinking about it, and I was thinking, wait a minute. I'm the people they're laughing at.
My son and my daughters are the people that they're laughing at. I hear banjo music. Because you know that's a reference to Deliverance, right? Yeah, and what happened to Ned Beatty and all of that.
Squeal like a pig!
Yeah. Not pretty. Paddle faster. I hear banjo music. Because, you know, that's what we are around here. It, you know, and it's funny that there's a reference to deliverance in West Virginia whitewater rafting when that whole damn thing took place in Georgia. That's where the buggy ears and the banjos and the inbreds and the Uncle Daddy happened. Not here. Not here. Paddle faster. I hear banjo music. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Brooklyn. Yeah, the Bush family strikes again. That's all I need to say.
In which regard?
Look at the two states that can turn this whole thing around and get our 60 votes for the public. Maine.
Ah, you mean Connecticut?
In Maine. The Bush family owned Joe Lieberman. George W. did not kiss him on the forehead for nothing.
Well, shucks, I thought he puckered up and kissed him right on the mouth.
Well, that's it. I don't know.
No, I'm sorry. That was the king of Saudi Arabia he kissed square on the mouth. Usually you got to go to some little, you know, peep show to see that kind of thing, but...
Oh, yeah.
Not when a Bush is president. Oh, hell no.
I'll kiss someone on the mouth if I got the money that the Bushes were getting from the Saudi royal family.
Now, let's not completely call your ethics into question, Kevin. Because then somebody's going to, well, Bob, what would you do? What would you do for lottery money? And I don't want to think about it. Might involve somebody looking at me and saying, squeal like a pig. No, I'll stay poor.
But one thing I'll never kiss Joe Lieberman in the mouth for anything. Just of me living in the state bordering his state makes me need to shower.
That's, yeah, exactly. That's what I was talking about earlier this evening, talking about being in D.C. I feel like I need to wear one of those flu masks. Just to make sure that no molecules that Joe Lieberman have breathed have any sort of ingress into me.
Okay, the next thing you know, I might be behind the microphone on Thursday talking like this.
And then I'd know it was all over.
Man, it's like Joe Lieberman, and, you know, it's like he is so bought and paid for it.
Oh, yeah, bought, signed, sealed, delivered, the works.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it goes back to that Calvinistic notion. And you know, Joe Lieberman to me is the poster boy for self-hating Jewish people, if there are, because of those Republicans.
You can make that argument. That if that demographic exists, if that psychographic exists, that he's the guy. You know, how must it feel to get up every morning and look at yourself and say,
well, I got to go and sell my soul some more. I'm going to take some more money from the insurance industry. Adasa, are you going to go take more insurance from the insurance industry? Yes, dear. Don't we hate ourselves? Yes, dear, but we're rich.
So, you know, cold comfort, I guess.
You know, it's like, okay, you know, he goes to these, you know, fundamentalist churches as guest speakers, and they want to slit his throat.
Oh, they would if they got a chance. Well, not until Jesus. No, wait, Kevin. Not till Jesus comes back and tells them to. They're very patient like that. But no, you're right. It's all a sham. It's all fraud. You know, the whole reason that, you know, nobody thinks that he thinks anything about an economic recovery.
That's BS from the, you know, from the word go. Please, for the love of God.
If you really want an economic recovery, bring out health care, make it a government, you can hire at least 50,000 people, you know, right off the bat to administer that.
Yeah.
At $50,000 a year. And pay a couple of executives $100,000 a year.
And that ain't bad living. I mean, granted, $400,000 a year, you're not eating lobster every meal, just once a day.
Yeah.
But you can get by.
Yeah. It, you know, so it's like, to me, it's just amazing the greed in this country. The greed, the unlimited greed of the country. And that's what's going to lead to the downfall. Well, we don't even broke the country down. It's just, you know, we're so overdosed by the media to realize it.
Probably right. You know, it's a matter of not paying attention. You know, what's the old bumper sticker? If you're not, you know, if you're not furious, you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Yeah, that. Seems it makes sense to me.
And it's just, again, it's a matter of, you know, people need to start, you know, like remember the movie Wall Street where it says, you know, don't get too emotional about the stock.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get don't let your emotions cloud your judgment.
Don't get too emotional about nations now.
But I tell you what, I will get emotional about my fellow Americans.
Oh yeah, well, you know, you know,
because I can't stand. I simply cannot tolerate the idea that these blithering, dithering fools like Joe Lieberman are willing to stand in the way. You know, in other words, he's saying that this economic recovery that he has suddenly noticed is worth more than the lives of 45,000 Americans per year. And that is an equivalence that I cannot buy into. Because that's 45,000 people with 45,000 mothers, 45,000 fathers, 45,000 brothers or sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, daughters, sons. And the ripple of misery just extends from where Joe Lieberman drops them in the great pool of profit. And I can't stand for that. I can't stand it. It sickens me. And Kevin, is that me, or is that the normal response? Is that the response that should be happening all over this country?
Of what?
Of being unable to tolerate the idea that Joe Lieberman is willing to have 45,000 people killed in the name of economic recovery.
Oh yeah.
Because that's what it is. I haven't seen anywhere else, Kevin, where people have made that connection. That Joe Lieberman is willing to have 45,000 Americans per year killed so long as he can have something that he calls economic recovery.
You know, and, well, it's a lot of things. Look how many millions of people are living in misery under the bushes who are dead. You know, how much blood is on their hands?
Buckets, gallons, five, a tanker, railroad car,
oil,
tankers
oil
full.
Tanker, yes, oil tanker full of blood and living in misery.
All we got in common is our misery. The least we can do is share it.
You know,
it's a hell of a motto, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is why I say I don't believe for 1 minute the Gilligan's Island routine George W. put on for the past 8 years. That is.
Oh, he took that on the road. Did you catch that? They've let him out of his hidey hole. I guess it's kind of like how they take old Broadway shows on the road to Buffalo and try it out somewhere else before it came to Broadway. And, you know, there it is. George Bush was let out to go and speak, and there he was yammering away in, what, Fort Worth, Texas today? Yeah, he spoke to nearly 15,000 people at the Get Motivated seminar in Fort Worth. The report says that he focused on lighter topics like picking out a rug design for the Oval Office that reflected his optimism.
Oh, yeah.
You want to guess how much he made on this?
A couple hundred thousand.
He made, for the speech he gave, Kevin, he made $3,571 per minute.
How long was the speech?
28 minutes.
Wow.
100 large.
Yeah. But my thing is, I never believed George W. was an idiot from day one. He purposely played the fool because, you know, there's certain parts of this country who don't like intelligent people. And you know, the dumber politicians are, the more like us. That nonsense.
Well, I tell you what, we got a hell of a fight in front of us, don't we, Kevin? Seems to me, at least. And if we don't take it seriously, and if we don't understand that, you know, what you said is true, you know, he played the fool. But at his core, he is a Bush, and he's a mean-spirited, pig-eyed, jug-eared little warmonger with, again, buckets of blood on his hands. If we don't understand that that's the people that are opposing us and that we oppose, we're going to get our asses handed to us. Is that about fair, you think?
Yeah, but I'm telling you, these people are just greedy mean, and
greedy and mean. They often go together, don't they? And they've found their perfect nexus in George W. Bush. Kevin, I got a roll, but good talking to you, brother.
Okay.
I'll catch you soon. All right, bye. From Brooklyn, that's Kevin. And it's time to wrap things up, I guess. About 7 minutes and change before the hour. Everybody get ready to run on over to Malloy. Unless you're listening to the rerun stream after Malloy, in which case, well, I don't know what comes next. But wherever you've been and whatever you've been doing, I thank you for sharing your time with us this evening. It is time that is joyously shared on this end, I can tell you that much. As soon as I close down the shop here, well, I know that Agnes has been feverishly packing my bag for heading for D.C. tomorrow. I'm looking forward very much to sharing that all with you. And I might get to meet some new folks because, among other things, I think the stream link is going to be on the webpage there at Campaign for America's Future. Building the New Economy. I can't wait to hear what we hear and see what we see. And we will do everything in our power to make it as real and immediate for you as we possibly can. I think it's a great use of the Horn's abilities, talents, time, and resources. And I hope you do as well. Of course, you know, the double bonus, extra super good cherry on top of the ice cream sundae treat for me is getting to work with Guy James. because it is impossible not to have a great time behind the microphone and a great time in D.C. When you got Guy James alongside. So I'll get out of here as early as I possibly can in the morning, drive to D.C., hopefully hook up with Guy about 3 o'clock, then there's a reception tomorrow evening. Trying to figure out if there's some way I can fire up a microphone and do a little broadcasting then, but that's probably a little too much after a long day on the road. Might be interesting, though. Might be interesting. At any rate, again, thank you for this evening. Thank you for being here last night as well. Thank you for a couple of highly enjoyable programs on my end. You know, I wouldn't do this if I didn't enjoy it. I've done enough things in my life that, you know, going out the door every morning, I went with my heels dragging and my head hung. Oh, goody. I get to go hustle AOL to people without computers again. Oh, joy. Hold me back. Yeah, I've done that. This I love. And I hope you know that. Thank you for everything you've done toward keeping us afloat in the past month. And just another reminder that Maura's challenge is still out there. Need about $130 to make up the $250 that she has already pledged. And that will actually close out October, meeting our monthly goal for the first time in a long time. And that's refreshing. And it also means there will be November, which, at the tender age of 4 years old for the horn, I think is a really, really neat thing, having a November when you've just turned 4. So that's where it all stands. If you care to use the PayPal button, if you do things that way, the button's right there at headonradionetwork.com. There's a tab called Contribute, where you can also find the snail mail address. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in Bravo, 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, W-V, 25801. Had a bunch of other stuff to get into this evening. We ran short. One of these days, this is just going to have to turn into a 6-hour program, and that's all there is. It's no way around it. And you know what? That'd be fine by me. So the next time you hear from me and or Guy, we'll be in Washington, D.C. I hope you'll be right where you are, and I hope you'll be with us. Getting that stream won't be any different than tuning into the program on any other given day. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this possible. Thanks to Peter Godbold, who continues to recover, we're happy to announce. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch. Thanks to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. The Coal River Wind Project is under threat. And if you haven't called the White House yet, if you haven't done everything you can to try to save Coal River Mountain for real economic prosperity in southern West Virginia, I implore you to do so. It's worth it. For people who are your fellow Americans, it's worth it. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Live show is on in less than 1 minute.
Live! Live, do you hear me? Here's my creation! Live!
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let's go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Give countdown. Six, five, four, three, two, one.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon and welcome everybody to the Guy James Show. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. I'm okay. I hope you're okay. I hope you're having a good day. I am so far. Had a big old birthday over the weekend, and, well, another year older, another day older and deeper in debt, as Tennessee Ernie Ford used to say. Remember that song? Some people say, you know, well, I used to do an impersonation of Tennessee Ernie Ford. He was a heck of a guy and a pretty good singer, a good old baritone bass singer, and I enjoyed Tennessee Ernie. We've got a lot to talk about today for the next couple of hours anyway, and we hope you'll stay with us for the whole 2 hours. Of course, Wednesday, I do want you to know tomorrow is a travel day, and you'll probably be hearing a best of show. Bob and I will be on our way to our nation's capital, to good old Washington, D.C., for a conference taking place there. It's called Making It in America, Building the New Economy. And it's put on by the Institute for America's Future, the same organization, same group that does the Take Back America Conference. And we always enjoy going to those. Mr. Robert Borisov is in charge of that organization. We'll be seeing him. And among other luminaries that will be there, Senator Sherrod Brown, Senator Jim Webb, Representative James Clyburn, they'll all make it unless some sort of a emergency takes place up the street at the Capitol Building. This is on New Jersey Avenue, a beautiful place right up the street from where we did the inaugural broadcast. Can't remember, the Liaison Hotel is where we did the broadcast from. It's right across the street from the Hyatt Regency. And Washington Court Hotel, where we'll be doing this, is a block further north up the street. And the wonderful thing about New Jersey Avenue is that you can walk out of your hotel or a restaurant or whatever, any place else you happen to be on that beautiful street, and look south, and there's the Capitol Building just right in the middle of the street as you look down to it, sticking up, displayed beautifully. And it's just always a wonderful sight to look down there, and especially at night. Have you been to Washington at night and seen the dome lit and the White House lit and the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Monument on dark nights when it's lit all night long is a spectacular sight, as is the Iwo Jima Monument. Washington is gorgeous at night. I recommend sometime, if you can, going up at night in the Washington Monument. You'll clear up the top, clear up in the peak there, and then looking out upon this spectacular city. one of the most interesting cities in the world. And looking at it at night, with all the monuments lit, the Jefferson Memorial, as you drive by or walk by the Jefferson Memorial, you can see Thomas Jefferson standing in there ever so stately, and with many of his famous quotes described upon the walls in there. And there is no more spectacular sight. Let me tell you something that a lot of people I don't think realize. We see the bigger and bolder monuments around Washington, D.C., but at night, to go by the wall, the Vietnam Wall, and then very nearby, after you head kind of west toward the Vietnam Wall, and you get through there, you come upon the Korean War Memorial. And it is lit at night, and I don't know of anything that grabs me more in Washington. It gets my attention. It sends chills down my spine than the Korean War Monument, because it's a collection of soldiers bigger than life size standing there in their war gear, frozen in time, with the looks on their faces. And I can't tell you who did those statues at this time. I should look that up. But it is an eerie, I guess it just shows the face of war on the soldiers' faces more than any other place. Of course, the Second World War monument, being the newest of the majors, is spectacular in and of itself. It's on the Mall as you look between the Capitol building and on toward down the Lincoln and up. You know, Lynn Font, when he designed Washington, D.C., what a brilliant man he was. I have often wondered if his plans for the city, if he ever had any idea of just how spectacular it would be. For example, I have one of the best places in Washington to look out upon the city is if you happen to be in the Speaker of the House's offices in the Capitol building. And I've been fortunate enough to be there during the day and look out the window west down the reflecting pool and then the Washington Monument and the World War II Monument and the pond in front of the Lincoln Monument and on up the hill at Arlington Cemetery, where now three Kennedy brothers are buried, and the Lee Mansion sitting on top of that hill. The sight down through there is breathtaking. And I would also add the sight from the Lee Mansion in Arlington, looking the other direction, is spectacular. I must say, for the Kennedys, you couldn't pick a better place to be buried, if that is your want, than right there. That's a spectacular sight. And anybody ever going to Washington, do take the time, and it's a little bit of extra time if you're downtown and all, but do take the time to go and take a good look around Arlington National Cemetery. If you want to get a feeling of history, if you want to get a sense of what this nation is really all about, the sacrifice that's been given